So today is a special day for me as our guest is one of the dearest people in my life. Anne-Marie Bauer is a pediatric nurse, as Amit had said. She's also a yogi and a holistic healthcare professional. She spent years focusing on how to bring the heart to the bedside in hospitals where, from my perspective, empathy is not so much part of the mandate. She's been a volunteer with Service Space for several years now, and she practices everyday acts of heroism all the time. Thank you so much for sharing your spirit with us today, Anne-Marie.
Thank you for having me.
How are you feeling today?
I'm feeling really grateful to be on the call, to be a guest speaker. I've been on the other side listening to these amazing people who have brought their perspective and how they bring kindness and compassion to the world. And I won't lie, I'm a little nervous because I'm not one to usually like to be in the spotlight. But knowing that it is an act of service, I'm really happy to be here.
And we'll all be holding you together, as you heard in the call. There's a lot of folks that are joining in a circle, so I would encourage all of us to think about this as a circle virtually, not a single person in front of a stage. And so I'd love to start from kind of an earlier stage and work our way forward. Curious why nursing became such a passion to begin with.
Really good question. It's a good place to start. I can't really think of reasons, but more so two people in my life, particularly on the call. We've heard how our mothers have been so important role models, and for me personally, I feel my mother was a strong role model for me. Also, a single parent of six children, and you know, had this caring nature that was so unconditional. She, you know, well, she would oftentimes have to take, you know, more than one job to support us all. And one of those jobs was as a home health aide. And so I would hear stories of her her day taking care of these elderly people or these children with disabilities. And even so, spending so much energy and care and time devoted to their well-being would still come home at night and tuck us in and would still have the energy to ask us about our day and to make sure that we were fed and clothed. So my mother being a really strong model, role model in my life for that. And then later on in life, my aunt, whom I didn't really know so well growing up, because I grew up in Finland and then moved to the States later on. But my aunt is also a nurse. And there was this time when I was debating whether I should move back to Finland after I had come here my senior year of high school. And my aunt had asked me what my wishes were, what I wanted to do, where I was kind of going with my life. Like, and it was a big turning point because I, you know, I didn't have this clarity. But she asked me to shadow her one day at the hospital that she worked at. She was a neuro ICU nurse. So, you know, patients that are in very critical stages, a lot of them comatose. A lot of the nurses do total bed care, so it's very intense. And when I shadowed her, I was 18 years old. I walked through these hospital floors and just saw just the joy that was there, even in these situations where these patients could potentially pass very quickly. But the empathy and the care that she exemplified for me was tremendous. And I, she's such a giving and loving person as it is. And so she invited me to live with her and to offered me a place to stay while I went to college and supported me And because she was such an inspiration, I decided to go into nursing. And just a story about that. While I was in nursing school, I ended up having, I think my last semester, second to last semester, I started having intractable migraines, where going to the clinical practice and going into the class study was really difficult. I had a hard time focusing. I felt nauseous all the time. I had these moments where I couldn't see, any light would aggravate me and noise. So it was very hard to focus. And there was a point where I felt like I shouldn't continue with my school. And we went through this process of going to doctors and seeing, what they could do to help with this. And the moment where I broke down, I was like, I can't do this. I'm going to have to maybe continue next year, but I'll have to start the entire semester all over. So there would be 1 year lost because in nursing, it's sequential. You have to go through each step in order to get to the next. And it's not like if you miss one course, you have to pick up, you can, pick it up any time. But I came home one day from school and my aunt had left a book at the table, the kitchen table. And I'm getting a little emotional about it because it was really touching. She left the book, The Little Engine That Could. And for those of you who don't know the story, it's a little story about, it's a children's book, but about this engine that would try and huff and puff his way over this big hill. And he, he had a hard time. He admired these big engines that could. And they would get over it with ease. And he would try and try and try. And at one point, he kind of got to this point. He's like, I can't do this. But then in the turning point of the story, somebody had, I guess, a bigger engine said, like, no, you could. Just think you can. Just think you can. So he ended up trying again and getting through this mountain and saying, I think I can. I think I can. I think I can. So my aunt said, there's nothing that you can't do. You just have to think you can, and you will. You are limitless. And she's like, even if it comes to be that you feel like it's not your time, next time it will be, but there's nothing that you cannot do. And so that was a huge inspiration for me. She's been a really big part of my life. And so that's kind of what led me into nursing.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm moved by how you have family members that come from the same space, and now you're carrying on, call it that tradition. And I'm curious, so you made mention of this type of ICU nurse that your aunt was, and you also are a specific kind of a bedside nurse. And I was wondering if you can just give us a little bit more color about what that is. What's the day-to-day like of being a nurse in the corner of the world that you are?
Oh, wow. Yeah, so it's being a bedside nurse. Where do you start? Life there is so many things. It's unbelievable at times. The things that you see, the people that you meet, the days are sometimes very scary. Sometimes they're extremely hilarious. In moments, you're kind of grossed out by what's happening there, but you're like, hey, this is actually kind of cool. Like, I'm seeing this and experiencing this.
Grossed out by what? Can you give us specificities?
Yeah, so, I mean, in particular, so I work in on a pediatric floor, and so you're constantly stretched to be creative and in particular with kids, like one day you're changing your tone to be able to meet a two-year-old and play with them before you take the stethoscope over to them and listen to their heart or their lungs. And the next moment you're walking into a room where you have a teenage patient, and so you got to be like really frank with them, like tell them kind of the way it is and just give them the respect that they need. And then other times you're calling blood like a red body juice so that the little kids aren't afraid of what's coming out of them when you're drawing their blood. And other times you're coming up with names for an ostomy pouch so an 8-year-old doesn't feel so alienated from this pouch that's, you know, having her bodily functions pour into it and is not, you know, not feeling terrible about her body image. And so, and it actually happened recently where this past summer, there was this young girl who at that age is a very, it's a very sensitive time for them when they're becoming aware of their bodies and moving into pre-teenage years. And this particular girl had like an inflammation of her bowel, so ulcerative colitis or Crohn's. And she ended up coming in what we thought was for a routine surgery. And then had a lot of complications. And, you know, she was prepared mentally from what her parents told me that, you know, she was going to have this operation to have a pouch outside of her body in which her stool would collect into. And at first, you know, she was prepared for this. But when the actual day came that she saw it, she didn't want to have anything to do with it. And it's you have to be really creative with them, and you know, teaching them is essential. So we came up with like names, and like, you know, of course the things that we eat and the consistency can change. So eventually we got to a point where she had a nickname for it, and she was like, oh wow, look, it's this color now today, and look, I ate this, and this is what's coming out. And so it's a journey with them. And I feel like it's the day-to-day is really stepping into what is needed. In any given moment, you got to put on a different hat and hopefully try to be as creative as possible and just feeling out the needs of what your patients are, like what is needed in the moment, what is it that they're feeling. Like, how can you fill into their needs? Yeah.
So I hear you talking about the importance of feeling and connecting, and really the word that comes to my mind is empathy. And I'm also aware, having been in a hospital as a patient in the past, that I haven't necessarily felt like that spaciousness was present because everything is pretty go, go, go. For lack of a better phrase, money is starting to become the driver. And so I'm curious how what you've just described juxtaposes with the approach that the hospital takes towards service as a whole.
Yeah, so it is a very fast-paced environment. You know, it is a business. I mean, I'm not too familiar with the overall big scale business portion of it, but what I feel sometimes, and I've had a lot of nurses verbalize and say the same, is that, you know, sometimes you feel like these patients are kind of an assembly line, that, you know, they're treated, their symptoms are kind of, like, you get them stable and then they're out the door and then they come back again. And so, you know, I know most hospitals, it varies, it's tricky. They're all, you know, would say that they put patients first, and that is their motto. And I know some hospitals, you know, it can look very different. Like, some hospitals might be doing an actual better job of that. But, like, what is it really, what does that really entail in such an environment that is so fast-paced where, there's a lot of disconnection actually to the patient itself.
So you had mentioned earlier of your upbringing in Finland, and as I understand it, you've had over half of your upbringing be in Finland. And I'm wondering how you feel what you do in the workplace and perhaps beyond. How did growing up in that part of the world have an impact on your values?
Good question. I think us Finns in general are pretty humble people. We're pretty quiet, but yet we're very proud of our roots and our traditions that I feel like are closely tied to simplicity, appreciating nature, and community building. It's been in the news a lot, but the Nordic countries have been kind of highlighted as having a pretty extensive social welfare structure, in which the objective is really to give everyone a decent living conditions. You know, even if it's not, you know, if you're not native to Finland, and you're Finland has taken in a lot of immigrants. You know, just when it comes to the social welfare package, like even from the very beginning of life, you know, mothers are given this maternity package, in which includes everything you can think of that a child would need in the very early stages of their life. And that's given to everybody, no matter what socioeconomic structure you come from. Everybody gets the same. And with that, you know, even mothers and fathers are supported by the government. The government actively supports its people to give them this ample time to be with their children at that early stage. And in so many different levels, too. I mean, it's not just during the maternity paternity times, but there's the social welfare structure is just designed to give everybody an equal chance and wanting them to have a decent living conditions. And then growing up in such an environment, you know, I feel like simplicity has been a really core value for me. Like Finnish people tend to, they're not one to one up the other. And so we tend to appreciate having our basics and focusing more on socializing with community and really appreciating nature. And so, like, you know, when I think of my own values, like simplicity, nature, and then community-oriented activities are really close to my heart. And it's living in that environment has shaped the way I try to cultivate those, like in the way I live my life. I recognize that, you know, if I'm living simply, it's not just for myself. It's connected in this greater web with everyone else.
Sorry, I'd just love to jump in there, because what I hear you describing as a value system is something that, again, from my perspective, is antagonistic to the value system of the hospital that you go to every day. And here you are, you're in the belly of the beast, so to speak. How do you think about living these values and you know, call it being the change in a place where the opposite is what is valued?
Well, yeah, so it's a constant practice of trying to live those values in a place that's challenging. And I used to think that, you know, I was going into a profession, like nursing was a profession. But now I've seen the setting itself, like no matter what we do, you know, every day, it's the practice of our values that we're cultivating. So the belly of the beast, I feel that it's a challenging situation, it's a challenging place. But can you clarify a little bit that question for me? Like, what is it?
Well, so I hear you saying simplicity and being connected at a social level. I mean, this is also, from my perspective, a form of healing. And yet the hospital system says the right form of healing is taking on medications, being exposed to such and such substances. That's how health is created. And so, you know, how do you say, okay, well, I want to live my values of simplicity and sharing at the heart level when there's no space or time for that?
Well, I feel like, yeah, it is very challenging at times, and despite that, I try to find these micro moments where I can practice. I feel like time is very limited, even though I'm there for 13, 14 hours a day at times. And the amount of people that I might come in contact with during the day there's so many. But even so, like I try to make each encounter, I try to create those connections with people. When it comes to teaching them about, let's say, I mean, I was one of the values that I hold dear is nature and living close to nature, and that includes nutrition. So, discussing ways with patients and parents, because I deal a lot with parents because they are the primary caregivers of their children on an everyday basis, and so the choices they make impacts their children's health. So, trying to give them maybe nutritional advice that may not be somewhat in alignment with the prescribed drugs that I'm giving them. I'm carrying out orders, but finding ways that, for example, very simple examples, pain management. There's a lot of drugs that are given for pain management, which escalates other things in the body, such as a blockage in your intestine, so you can get constipated from that. And finding nutritional modalities to aid with that. Prune juice is a really great thing that we provide for the kids, and talking to parents about maybe dried apricots and also high in iron, and just finding creative ways to give them a choice, to give them options, and saying that this is ultimately we're here to provide these options for you, but you are your own person, and you have to make these decisions.
And
And
Maria,
we're there to say.
I love how you're making it hit the ground. It's not like you're saying, "Oh, well, I just pray for them." It's like, no, we can give them prune juice instead of having them have to do all of these things. Yeah, it's striking me really deeply. Sorry, I just wanted to jump in there with that.
No, that's okay. I appreciate the questions, though. The other thing that came to mind was, I talked about pain management, and I've had a lot of struggle with this because sometimes we give some really, really intense pain medications, and without really assessing the deeper causes of pain. And I had a patient in particular that, was coming to mind, this 17-year-old female who was diagnosed with HIV and then later turned into AIDS. And that's a longer story. She didn't know she was diagnosed with this. Her parents kind of kept the information from her until she was, about 14 or 15. So she didn't know of her disease process until she was, much later in life. And so there was a lot of emotional pain tied into the physical symptoms that she was experiencing. I mean, she definitely had physical pain. But I realized that she would know exactly when her pain medications were due, and she would call us in, even sometimes before, and just cry and moan, and it was really heartbreaking. Some of the nurses' approach was like, "Well, I'm gonna just give this pain medication, like everything that we could possibly give her, we were giving her." But in such a situation, like, I feel like it's really important to also address the emotional aspect of it. And I sat with her, and I found out there was a lot of fear involved. She knew she was gonna die. She was at such a late stage, and so in just sitting with her and talking to her, She was afraid. She was afraid that she was going to be alone, that we were going to walk out the door and her mom and dad weren't going to be there at the time, so they didn't really visit her as much. But that, you know, that we would be so busy that she would end up passing and there would be nobody around her when that happened. Mm. And so I'm sitting Pardon?
I'm sorry. I was going to ask, did she just open up and tell you that right away? Or because it seems like, you know, someone like that might be filled with a lot of anger or take it out on people around her, understandably, given her situation. And so I'm just curious how you approached her, how you got her to even open up to you and share that and help allow you to help heal her in a different way.
Yeah, so I think oftentimes it's the energy you bring. I mean, even just there's so much going on, but when you walk through that door that of the patient or like through the curtain, you are there for them in that moment, and you have to have them understand that there's nothing else that's more important than that moment. And it's really hard. And when you're taking care of maybe six people at a time and everybody's calling you at once. But, you know, I knew that she, and again, in your mind, you have to prioritize and figure out what's needed most in that given time. So sitting with her, even though I knew that this medication that's due at this time might be a little late, but she needs this right now. And sitting with her, holding her hand, and just, you know, asking questions. Again, it's important to ask questions because then you allow them to, you know, share in a way that they might have not felt that they could share before. So it was really sitting with her.
So Anne-Marie, can I jump in there?
Yeah, sure.
I'm curious. So what I hear you making mention of is these small things. You know, it's not the big things that you can make the change of. It's like the system is the system. And I've seen you constantly engage in these small things to uplift and to be there for other people. And I'm wondering if you could zoom out on that part of your own journey. How did that become such a strong practice for you?
How did the small things come a big practice for me?
Yeah.
I feel like, again, it ties into, you know, seeing people that inspire you do these amazing things and wanting to and being on the receiving end of that as well. You know, I mentioned my aunt and my mother exemplifying, you know, kindness and compassion. And I used to think that, you know, one shouldn't highlight their own kindness and, like, share that with others. But then coming into the Earth Space field, like, kindness, again, like as mentioned, is such a beautiful platform where these stories are highlighted. And when somebody gets inspired by that, it just allows this ripple effect. Like, wow, like I want to embody those qualities. And so I think really it's having this culture of people who practice these makes me want to practice it as well and wants to embody that. And I've, like I said, had two amazing role models in my life that have been that example for me.
Mm. Thank you. And Amit, I didn't know if you want to jump in with the question there.
Yeah, actually, if you don't mind, I did want to jump back just a little bit more into the healthcare environment and how you bring together, you know, your values and the work environment. And this sort of lends to what one of our callers early on this morning I asked Celeste, I believe, in terms of what you bring to the actual workplace. And so I was wondering if you had a story or that you could share about, you know, how you, you know, even like bringing the nurses together or creating some kind of environment that helps live out your values, that helps practice this sort of nurturing ability or kindness or whatever it might be.
Sure. Well, the one thing that comes to mind is while I was living in New York City, I worked in a pretty large hospital, and coming in every day, you know, you're met with a lot of resistance and a lot of you know, people who might be complaining a lot and, like, things go wrong a lot of the time. And so I was coming into this every day and feeling that energy. And I felt like, you know, there's so much good that happens here too. There's so many things that go right. And, you know, how can I highlight that? And so I went to my manager and asked her if there was a way we could come together in a circle at the end of our shift. And that in itself, I know is really challenging because we're all so busy. But trying to make an intention of coming together and acknowledging the things that went right, acknowledging each other for the good that we're doing, like, you know, just, you know, having another nurse help me lift a patient or turn a patient and thanking her for that. And so my manager, she was okay. She's like, okay, well, you know, I know you guys are busy, but we can try this. And we did. We came to a circle each time we invited parents and, you know, the physicians as well. And just to kind of pause at the end of the day to see if this would, if we can acknowledge the gratitude and the good that had happened that day. And some people shared and others kind of felt like this is not for me. Like, I'm too busy for this. I need to get out. And so that circle kind of fizzled. But I still felt it was important to really acknowledge everybody's hard work and efforts. And so I went back to my manager. I was like, okay, fine. Like, I know that didn't work, but let's see if I can try something else. And how about, you know, a gratitude board? And so when we clock in and out, there's this big board that we would write anonymously these kindness notes towards each other and say, like, hey, Michelle, like, thank you so much for grabbing those linens for me when I was so busy, or, like, thank you for XYZ, and or I'm really grateful that, you know, my meds were on time and the day just flew by so beautifully, or, like, small things like that. And so, you know, towards the end, people were kind of curious to see if their name would end up on that board. And what happened was that, you know, that ended up being just an excuse. Like, later on, I found that the floor that I worked on became such a really happy place to be, where people were, like, looking for excuses to do something for each other and acknowledge that. And so that board wasn't really even needed anymore. It just became, like, second nature for people to really look out for these opportunities in which they could thank another or do something nice for another. I mean, we're doing things all the time, but just highlighting that good is essential. It helps the morale of the place that you're working in.
So I'm curious to dive a little deeper into that. This idea of communication, group communication, personal communication. You've told me that words are only a piece of communicating that one cares. So can you share some other ways that you've played with communication in your work or outside of your work, so that, you know, words are just a piece of it?
Well, I've been notorious for telling people that I have a hard time articulating myself. So the way in which I communicate, I feel the best, is sometimes not even using words, but my presence. And that, I feel like, sometimes gets underlooked a lot at the environment in which I work in. You know, you can walk into a room and, you know, one example comes to my mind. It was a patient that I had who developmentally was challenged, so milestones were not there, had a cerebral palsy and developmentally delayed, could not verbalize anything, couldn't speak, but you could see it was very much there. It was this beautiful spirit. And his mother knew, you know, what his facial expressions meant, and, you know, his quote-unquote energy, like the energy that he was in. And walking into a room, they sense your own energy immediately. What is it that you're bringing into that room? Are you bringing stress? Are you bringing frustration? Or are you coming in with compassion and empathy? Are you checking yourself before you walk in and noticing what are the thoughts that are in your mind? Are you thinking about the next patient next door and how you need to get this and that done? Are you thinking about wanting to just get out of there and, you know, make it home on time? So for me personally, it's just really tuning in to the energy that I communicate with. And, you know, in this case, this particular patient, like the patient's mother had mentioned how when I came to the bedside and the way I was interacting with him, she said that he smiled instantly. And there's other times when she didn't, he had such a flat affect for so many days. And again, I don't know exactly what it was that I was doing, but I remembered, you know, the intention of how I walked in the room and what could I bring to the bedside. But I feel like, you know, touch is important. It's such an essential way of communicating. You communicate with your eyes. You can smile with your eyes. Most often we're wearing a mask. You know, sometimes we're wearing a mask, so they can't even see your smile, but, like, how can you communicate with your eyes and smile with them and just touch? So there's so many ways in which you can communicate empathy and compassion and just bringing a spirit of deep presence.
I resonate, and I think about how to actualize this. So, like, you're saying these things as though I've seen you embody them, and I'm wondering how you'd think about sharing that, the embodiment side. You know, how do you actually do this stuff? How do you go from intellectually talking about it or sharing these stories to be looking for these small ways to share with one's presence and move beyond the head on it?
Well, I think, I don't think. it's hard for me to say how I embody it, but what I feel is, you know, you're seeing each other as you know, as equal and as experiencing this life together, and knowing that when you connect with another person, you there's an aliveness that happens, and I feel like you want to experience that over and over again. Like when you're really deeply present with another person, I feel such an aliveness and a joyfulness, and I feel like in that, it's, you know, we do these things, these small things, like, you know, giving something to another person in a small way. But when we do that enough, it becomes almost second nature.
Thank you.
I don't know if I answered your question.
Well, it's a small, consistent thing as far as I hear it. Now, how to actually share that intellectually? Hey, I don't have the answer. That's why I was asking.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like when we're constantly, you know, seeing these opportunities in which we can connect, you know, whether it's opening a door for another person or you're talking to your neighbor, and it's just seeing each other, and, you know, the act of kindness itself is kind of it doesn't really matter what you're doing per se, it's the energy that you're bringing forth with that. You know, I've been a recipient of so many acts of kindness, and in that, like, people have brought me, just a few weeks ago, I was really, really sick, and one of my close friends brought me a home-cooked meal, and that The food was definitely nurturing, without a doubt. But the intention behind that was, it touched me so much because I didn't have the energy to cook, and she just cared so deeply for my well-being. And just, taking time to ask your neighbors how they're doing, and like really asking them, like, how are you today? And be present with, what they want to share. And you'll feel that connection.
Yo, Birju, if I can just jump in here for a second, I want to open up the Q&A. This way, all of our callers will have an opportunity. If they have a question for Anne-Marie, they can push *6 and they can be into the queue. Or if they just have a reflection in general, something that came up during the call that they'd like to share, they can go ahead and ask it. And as people come in with their questions or whatnot, we'll go to them and then we can bounce back and forth with questions you and I might have for her as well. And looks like we've already got a couple of few folks that are in the queue already. So, do you want to wrap up with one more question and then I'll go to our queue?
Absolutely. Thank you. And one other way that one can ask a question here is I think that we can send and receive emails at ask@servicespace.org, is that right?
Yes, please.
Okay, ask@servicespace.org. So, Anne-Marie, you've also dabbled in alternative approaches to care. I know that you've become a certified yoga teacher and also played around with holistic medicine and meditation. And I just wanted to get your take on your experience with that as an alternative to what you see in the workplace. And how do you think about these two on different hands or integrated?
Oh, sure. So there's definitely, I think modern medicine definitely lends a lot of positive. If you have a trauma or experience an emergency, I can't meditate a broken knee away. but when it comes to those micro moments of care, and I think I mentioned, pain management being a big one for me personally, like with wanting to alleviate pain, I found that meditation can be a great complement to that. So oftentimes I'll sit with my patients and I'll guide them through a meditation. And sometimes I've given them also additionally some sort of pain management allopathically, but just seeing the reaction in their bodies relax even before that medication has a time to set in. So guiding them through breath, allowing them to be aware of where that sensation is coming up and bringing healing to that place itself. I've seen such an amazing response. And so I've wanted to bring that more and more. It's not prescribed per se in my daily, but I'll see opportunities where that will be effective and want to create that for them. And yeah, so I feel like it's an important part of healing these modalities of nutrition. Like I said, I feel like is the building blocks and educating parents and patients on, sources of where they can have holistic food. And then the meditation portion, I feel like it's a really important aspect of my own journey because I remember feeling extremely anxious at work and feeling like I couldn't meet my patients' needs and started having physical chest pain. And so I went to my own doctor who asked me, he's like, well, or he told me that I was having micro panic attacks and prescribed me Xanax. And I was like, I can't take that. First of all, I'm at work when it happens. And so there's got to be other ways. And did some own independent research and came up with yoga and meditation as a guide as a way of healing my own responses to that stress. And so I use that on a daily basis when I'm met with these stressful situations and sometimes very physical sensations. I use my breath. I use my meditation as a way of healing in that moment.
Thank you.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to one of our callers. And again, if you have a question for Anne-Marie, you can go just push *6 on your phone and you'll be entered into the queue.
Good morning. Hi, Anne-Marie. So wonderful.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for your vulnerability and sharing so beautifully from your heart. I guess my question is sort of connected to these alternative healing modalities that you explore in your life. So I know that, you know, about, I guess, a year and a half ago, you used to live on the East Coast, and you talked about how much commitment and, you know, dedication it took for you to finish nursing school and achieve that, and how much support you received from your aunt, who's like a second mother to you. And so can you talk about your process when you decided, you know, that maybe you wanted to explore, I don't know, other ways of, not other ways, but I know that you took a break from nursing and you decided to study yoga in Bali and then serve in India for some time. But it was a hard decision for you. And I think it required quite a leap of faith for you. And so can you just talk about how you were able to feel into your heart and, you know, realize that this was the right way to go and it was okay to take a break from nursing for a little while?
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. It was a little bit of a challenging time because, you know, my family recognizes that I'm through my career, I've been a big support for them over the years. And so for me to want to completely disconnect from New York City and do something where I wouldn't be making money for possibly, you know, a few months or an unknown time. But I felt like it was really important for my own personal journey to kind of dabble in with facing fears of uncertainty and unknowns and wanting to explore deeper the healing aspect of yoga. And so I went to Bali and I did a yoga teacher training there and just learned, when you immerse yourself in a different culture too, there's so much growth that can happen because you're out of your comfort zone and you're experiencing life in the culture of others and how they live and eat. And I ended up, you know, going to a center and having my yoga teacher training there, but it was very much immersed in this this village. So we were very close by to the village. We got to interact with the locals and they were really closely tied to the living. Their intention was to live very closely to nature and do the least harm. So I got to practice a lot of farming and taking care of the land in addition to yoga. So it was very holistic. excuse me, I'm losing my voice. And then after that, I went to India where the mean of service really took on a whole different, it just became such a different meaning for me. Like I feel like I serve in ways that are helpful, but when I went to India, I had an experience that was just overwhelming. Like I felt like the service just took on a whole new meaning for me because it's there's such a deep level of care and unconditionality and letting go. Like people and the community there just would stretch themselves beyond anything I had ever experienced before. And I learned a lot. I learned a lot about letting go, trusting, excuse me, and just and following your heart in the moment.
Thank you.
Amber, we also have someone that has written in online, and they say, you know, hello, Anne-Marie. Thank you for being a part of this call. I wanted to join in as I consider you a dear friend, but didn't get a chance to because I'm running after a little toddler, but wanted to express what Anne-Marie means to many of us on the East Coast. We miss your hugs, your magnanimous and boundless energy, and most of all, your constant, strong, nurturing, and selfless nature. When I think of you or hear your voice, I smile, laugh, and feel more positive about the world as there are angels like you that are always watching over us. And the question I had for you was, is that since you live a simple life and you're always giving, how do you find the energy to just keep going with a smile during the days that you're just exhausted after working long hours at the hospital? Do you feel fulfilled each night when you go to sleep? Lots of love, Shale.
Aw. Aw, Shale is very sweet. He always makes me smile with his smile. There's definitely times when I come home very much drained, but I think what keeps me going is, again, the community around me, these pillars of light that are, even in their most, you know, exhausted state, you know, continuously give and show that are up on themselves, you know, late hours of the night, you know, trying to figure out ways in which they can serve more deeply. And so that is, you know, something to be inspired by. And, you know, I'm my own life partner right now who I see do that, just that, is up often late hours of the night. And you, I've known, like, even this past summer when we were doing a service-based internship for these youth, I mean, you would be up late hours of the night on the East Coast while we were taking a conference call. So it's really the community around me that keeps me going and wants, that inspires me to live in those ways and closer to the values.
Deflecting as always.
Yeah.
I was just about to say the same. Thank you. I'm going to go to one of our callers.
Hi, this is Radha here from Cupertino. I wanted to express my gratitude, Anne-Marie, for your very calming and humble presence, but I feel I've not met you personally. But I'm a physician, and I work in the hospital. I resonate with a lot of what you said today. And a couple of years ago, I think I was in the space of very negative energy where it became a job and a chore, and that was not the purpose of why I became a physician in the first place. I think coming to service space and hearing so many things kind of gave me a new vision. Last year, I think Audrey's call, there was one sentence which she said, and I see that echoed by you as well today, which is how you show up matters, how you show up to serve matters. And what you've been saying today all along, the theme is your presence, what you bring is what matters, and not what you say or do are the secondary manifestations of it. I've taken that more mindfully in my own practice. And, you know, in our work, like as physicians, we get this constant seeing patients. There's a constant churning that happens, and this wheel turns really fast nowadays. You know, they're getting patients admitted, taking care of them, and deciding it. Sometimes that becomes like a very exhausting experience rather than a nurturing experience, both for the patient as well as a caregiver myself, you know. But what you said today in terms of the presence, and what Audrey said, kind of made me go back a little bit and reapproach my job, not as a job, but as a privilege that we are given. One experience with a patient recently made me realize what a privilege it is for me to actually take care of them and change that. And then I started thinking, how do I change the energy around me as well? Because all I hear is, oh my God, this is another consult. I have to do this. I have to do this. It's a job. I have to go a weekend. You know, there's no joy in what we do. And our work is so, so important for so many reasons. And so I'm so thankful for all of you at Service Space, you and Audrey and so many more who bring out these values of gratitude, thankfulness, and service to such a light that people like me are inspired and try to live that in our own small way. And I think in the I have changed a little bit in terms of how I approach my job, but it is a work in progress. But I just wanted to say thank you so much for what you do.
Thank you. And I'm reminded of a quote by Gandhiji in which he shares, do not expect thanks for your work. Work that is undertaken for love is no burden. It's pure joy. And so yeah. I feel like it's really important to remember, again, that intention. And, like, yes, it's exhausting when you're pulled in so many different directions and you want to be there for everybody all at once. And we all come in with this intention to serve and to love. And I think it's we get caught up in those moments where we're not able to hold those intentions all the time. And I think that's where the frustration and the exhaustion comes from. But trying to remember the micro moments of slowing down in that moment, there's so much that can happen and so much connection and so much joy that can be transpired from caregiver to patient or anybody, friends, you know, family, anybody that you're in contact with.
Thank you again, Anne-Marie.
Thank you.
Thanks, Anne-Marie. You know, and thank you, Radha, for that, for bringing that up. It's almost apropos that you brought up the Gandhi quote. One of our other listeners, Guri, has written in, and she says, "Hi, Anne-Marie. Thank you for being on this call. Can you share a little bit more about your volunteer experience in India? It's not an easy country to be in, and on top of that, to be serving in such harsh conditions in the slums. How did you deal with all the challenges that sort of came along with it?"
Thank you, Guri, for bringing that up. yeah, it culturally was very different than anything I've ever experienced. But what I noticed, you know, no matter what culture I'm in, it's this basic desire to connect with another. And, you know, for me it was challenging because I feel very autonomous in my work setting and being overseas and in a space in which the language was different and I couldn't, you know, travel to places on my own. So I lost the sense of autonomy. I felt like, you know, I couldn't offer in the ways that I, you know, might have been able to offer back home. But I learned it wasn't so much in doing, and my friend Audrey and I have talked about this in length, where sometimes it's not what we're offering exactly. It's even just showing up and being present, sharing a smile or sitting down with the kids in the slums and just coloring with them or, you know, just bringing that presence of deep connection. I feel like I learned a lot just in offering. You know, no matter what it is, like, you always have something to give. And it's more so in the presence than in the actual deed.
Beautiful. Thank you. I'm going to go to our next caller.
Hi, this is Wendy again, and And I really appreciate all that Anne-Marie has said so far. I love the gratitude board. And I also very much identified with the physician who called in. I just retired as a nurse practitioner and in a big system. And earlier there was talking about surviving and being able to give of yourself in a big system. And there certainly have been days that I felt like a ping pong trying to meet the needs of my patients, the administration, my coworkers, and have frankly become very frazzled and have not always been as supportive as I'd like, and come, you know, on the way home beating myself up about that. And I think what's also crucial and what I've had to work on is self-forgiveness. And that perhaps I've not been, you know, this is not why I've gone into nursing, to be so frazzled, but to come back into myself and to forgive myself so that I can get up the next day and give it my all again. So I just wanted to add the self-forgiveness practice into the conversation as well. Thank you.
Thank you. It's so important. I remember early on when I first became a nurse, I would come home crying because I was like, oh my gosh, I forgot to give this to my patient. You know, I forgot to give them linens, or maybe I could have been better in that moment. And there's so much that I felt like I could have done better. And it's definitely, you know, worth reflection. But as you said, you know, to forgive yourself for being human and to go in with that much a stronger conviction to serve and hold yourself to those intentions. Self-compassion is key. You can't give from an empty pitcher. You have to always refill yourself and find ways in which you can heal yourself in order to heal others. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll go to our next caller.
Hello, this is Mindy Journey, and I'm calling from Illinois, and a lot of times I'm on the Pine Springs site, and I want to express my sincere thank you to the guest and to all who have made this call possible. Many times family have been on the receiving end of excellent nursing care and doctoring, and an instance I want to quickly share is when my mother was in hospice. She got to stay at home, and the visiting nurses came and all involved. And some of the best moments were sitting there with the visiting nurse in my mother's room, who was unresponsive, but yet there was a connection, and we felt a presence of connection and love. And I must say that I have kept this in my heart, and it has added a dimension to my life that when I visit those who are sick or who are in need care, I keep the vision of that beautiful nurse and what she meant to our family and to my mother. Thank you for all you do. I appreciate it. Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mindy. Can we go to our next caller?
Hi. My name is Harpreet, and I was I've always been very touched by talking to you and meeting you. Anne-Marie, thank you so much. I mean, your presence is, I don't know, it just does something. I feel like, I feel my heart kind of lights up and says hello whenever I see you. So, and when you're not there at the Wednesday night meeting, I'm always looking for you.
So,
it's so nice to hear you and hear your story finally. I guess I'm at a loss for words at this point. I was just wondering if you ever, you know, you were talking about all these alternative therapies and alternative practices with your patients, and if you ever did the touch thing, you know, because I know your touch is very healing. I felt it. And I know that you're very sensitive, sensitive to energy. So I wonder if you've kind of noticed that making a difference with your patients. Thank you.
I try to incorporate touch a lot into my care. And again, this notion of privilege you know, as was spoken earlier, like I do feel it's a huge privilege to enter into the energetic space of a patient, for there to be so much trust. You know, I've oftentimes, like, I do a lot of things that might not, at first glance, seem very healing. I mean, there's a lot of invasive things that we have to do as nurses that doesn't feel good to the patient, at least immediately. But the process in which you deliver that, and even afterwards, like embracing them in a hug or you know, holding a child when they're crying, just, you know, embracing them and enveloping them in this love and care, in itself is just really healing. You know, I mean, mothers know this very well, like when a child is crying, mm-hmm. or in pain, like you want to embrace them and touch them and soothe them, and in that, you know, it kind of just melts away that discomfort. I've not had an experience really diving deeper into energetic healing, but I feel like we all are healers in that sense. We all can bring touch and healing, again, with that presence. So I try to use it as much as I can, even, you know, when it comes to just, you know, rubbing the back of a child, you know, while they're in pain, or just, you know, bringing my hand to that source of pain or that sight, and just, you know, really trying to bring the energy of healing there. So, I mean, it's definitely an area in which I would love to really explore more of, but I feel like it's kind of innate in us at times. Like we all have that healing capacity with touch.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Go to our next caller.
Hi, this is Seema. Anne-Marie, thank you so much for your reflections and your stories. You're such a kind and gentle soul, and it's been so nourishing to just hear from you this morning. I was wondering if you could share a little bit more, maybe share some stories about how you extend that caring nature that you have kind of outside of the nursing work that you do at the hospital. I recall reading a story, I think it was last year, on the service-based blog, how you extended a helping hand to a neighbor that was in trouble, and I was just so touched by that story. So I was hoping you could share maybe a couple more stories of caring that you do outside the hospital.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thanks for asking that, Seema. I feel like I have a hard time, you know, kind of sharing things that I've done, but I know it's in service to others. So the thing that comes to mind with regards to last year is this friend that I met actually while we were taking a travel nurse assignment. So the very first week, I met this woman who happens to be from Finland as well. So we connected that very first day of orientation, and I later found out that she was placed in the same complex as I was. And so we, you know, set to show each other where we lived. And, you know, she showed me where she lived, and I invited her over for tea at my place. And that very same night as she was leaving, the very first day that she moved in, she left, and then a few minutes later came knocking on my door, frantic and in tears and crying. And I was just like, what happened? And I had just met her that day. And so I invited her in, of course. I'm like, what's going on? And turns out she was somebody had followed her to her apartment. Luckily, nothing terrible happened. I mean, she was able to avoid it, and she ran and drove right to my place across the complex, but felt like she couldn't return to her home, because now she knew that this man could potentially harm her, knows where she lives. And so I invited her to stay with me and live with me until there was other arrangements made. And for me, that was, I felt great. Oh my God, I had this new friend, and I you know, would cook with her after dinner, I mean, after work, and just, you know, just wanted to let her feel that, you know, no matter what, she had a safe space, and I was there to open up my home and my heart for her. And because, you know, we've all been in situations where we've really needed someone in a critical moment, and I was just really overjoyed that I could provide that for her. And then, you know, there's been times when I've gotten calls like 3 o'clock in the morning from friends whose cars have broken down in the middle of the highway and needed help, and I would get up and go and pick them up, and I feel really happy to do so, because I know that, you know, I've been on the receiving end of that as well, and it feels just tremendous, and you just want to be able to provide that when you have the opportunity.
Thank you. Thank you.
You know, Anne-Marie, I was thinking of, you know, the wonderful job you did this past summer mentoring our interns, and how much how influential you can be, or any of us can really be, in the lives of others. And so whether it's being shaped by certain experiences or just by the way a person is, and I'm curious if you could share a little bit about who some of your key influences are that have sort of made you the person that you are today.
It's Amit Bhai. I remember the first day I met you. Like, you gave me this huge hug, and I was like, wow, who is this person? This loving hug. It's really, like I said, like the people around me, I mean, I've been so blessed to be a part of Service Space. It's like to come to know the community within Service Space. And, you know, there's just so many pillars of light out there who are doing these amazing things. And, you know, like in India too, learning about these amazing people like Raghu Bhai, who would deliver the tiffins, the food for the elderly ladies who were widowed in the slums, and he would do this every single day, and he wouldn't eat before he had delivered the meals to everyone. And there's so many people within the community that continue to inspire me. And I feel like, you know, I have a lot of work to do, because there's just so much goodness out there, and I can be so much better. Yeah.
Thank you, Andre. I'm going to turn it over to Birju, and maybe you can close with final thought or question.
Sure. Thank you, Amit. I just want to close with gratitude. I have the unique opportunity to hear Anne-Marie's reflections on a more regular basis, and just to have her be able to share her voice on the small things that, from this community's perspective, make a big difference. Right? These weren't stories about how children were being saved from burning buildings, and, you know, the sensationalism that you hear in the dominant paradigm is not what this is about. It's about small, it's about subtle, and to hear story after story of that, to me, I mean, within the hospital setting, outside of the hospital setting, I'm just filled with gratitude that you share in this way. So thank you so much for joining us, Anne-Marie.
Thank you so much for having me. Like I said before, I've shied away from sharing this, but I know that ultimately there's been so many individuals in my life that I've shared their stories with and about them, and it's been inspiring to others. And so I hope I can highlight a little bit of those values that I've taken from others into my own embodiment. So I'm happy to share, and just really grateful to be on the call. And thank you, everyone who joined today. I didn't know how many people are on the call. I was kind of scared to even think about it. But just to hear that we've had people share from, you know, all over the country, even Alaska, like, I was totally blown away. So thank you all for joining the call.
Thank you, and we're going to shift over to the last part of the call, which is to shift into a thank you session. So we want to first take a minute of silence and gratitude for this space and this time, and once we come out of it, we'll move to a thank you. I'll call us in 60 seconds. All right. We're going to take this last bit last just to bit say thank you on the count of three to Anne-Marie. One, two, three.
Thank you.
Thank you.